Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Mythicast. I am former Magic the Gathering podcaster Spencer Halland, and I am joined by current nerd culture podcaster Wes Singleton. Hello, Wes.
Hey, how's it going? Current is
meaning right now. Right now, yeah.
Contemporary. Contemporary nerd culture podcaster Wes.
I have a question. Were you surprised that I tweeted I was done with Magic podcasting?
Spencer, I lost you there.
You can't hear me?
You went full robot for a moment.
I don't like robots.
Yeah.
They're scary. Were you surprised that I quit Magic podcasting?
I mean, I'm not that surprised. When you decided to step off of Constructed Criticism, your main Magic podcast you created, then made some sort of trying to stick with it, but not totally committed podcasts. It seemed like it was coming, but going cold turkey is pretty impressive for anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I sent that tweet into the Twitter sphere and was like, "Woo! Got more time to nerd out, baby. Let's go!" And we're gonna nerd out today, Wes, because we are talking our top five underrated Disney films. These are
You know it's nerdy because we're talking about things that are not considered cool.
Do people not like Disney?
No. People love Disney, but we're talking about...
Oh, underrated. Sure, yeah, that's totally fair. They're certainly not the most loved Disney films by far, but they are ones that we enjoyed.
Very much so.
So, with that being said, Wes, we're each going to go over our top fives. We want listeners to home know these are just our opinions. You might love them. You might not love them. That's okay. No. Leave a comment. Let us know your top five underrated. This could be life-changing for people. There's so much great media in the Disney universe, and we just want to share some of the stuff that maybe you haven't watched, maybe you didn't get to really love. And, you know, Wes, before we get started, I want to talk about the Disney eras, if that's okay, because it's interesting to think back to, you know, you have the... Is it the classic era? I actually don't even know what the Snow White...
Here, let's do a quick Google. Disney eras. We have a golden age, which is 1937 to 1942.
That's not a great era.
Yep. A wartime era, which is 1943 to 1949.
That doesn't seem as great either.
A silver age, which is 1950 to 1959.
I don't even know a film in that era.
I'm sure that I could look at a chart that would have all of this stuff for us. We have a Bronze Age. Could you imagine Bronze Age Disney, which is 1970 to 1988?
This is when like some of the, you know, I think things like Oliver and Company might have come out around that time. I think that came out in 89, but like Little Mermaid might have come out around that time.
Well, the image I'm looking at is too small to really get a sense of what it says. But it looks like Aristocrats might be Bronze Age.
Winnie the Pooh, The Rescuers. I was right. Oliver and Company is on there. Fox and the Hound. You know, and then you have
the Dark Cauldron. Ah, the internet was struggling.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's called the Black Cauldron, but yeah, that actually almost made my list. I actually really like that film. But yeah, then we have everybody's favorite, the Renaissance. You know, Rescuers, Down Under, Hercules, Mulan, Pocahontas, Lion King, Little Mermaid, Aladdin. You know,
literally
the only
our childhoods.
Yeah, I mean, The Hunchback of Notre Dame sucks, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of good there. Then we have the post Renaissance era, and this is actually the point that I wanted to make, is that, you know, this era had some really great ones. One that also almost made my list: Brother Bear, Lilo and Stitch. One is one of you on your list. Two on your list are actually
two
on here.
Two on my list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three on my list actually.
Boom.
Yeah. Apparently, I am a post-Renaissance stan.
Apparently. And then we have the revival era, which I have one on. So,
oh, man, can I get an honorable mention? Because I just realized a movie existed that I totally forgot about when considering this.
Of course. We'll both give honorable mentions.
Sure.
So let's actually give our honorable mentions, and then I'll do my top five, and you do your top five.
Oh, okay, we're just going to do like one and the other. We're not going to alternate.
Yeah, no confusion. I think, just so there's no confusion.
Sure.
So you do your honorable mention first.
Oh, Robin Hood. 100%. Fantastic film. Just pure fun adventure. They did a lot of animal-based movies during this time. It's a Bronze Age film, so it came out somewhere between the 70s and the 80s. But just awesome film, funny moments, memorable characters. One of my favorite Disney takes on a classic fairy tale.
You know, it's funny. I was asking my mom what movie we should watch for movie night this Friday, and she actually said Robin Hood. She's like, you loved it when you were Maxwell's age. You should totally watch it. And it's on my short list of things that, like, I don't remember loving it that much, but also that would have been when I was 3.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to, like, see if it holds up.
Yeah.
But I think that is Casey Bloodworth, friend of ours, favorite Disney movie.
Hmm. I wonder if that says things about Casey that I really shouldn't be reading in.
I don't know. You can read into Casey all you want, but it is interesting to know that, like, you know, I think that also that era, I don't know about how old your parents are, but for, like, me, my parents, like, had all of these on VHS when I was growing up, so, like, you know, I just had access to this era of Disney my entire life.
Yeah, not a little bit. I had a good amount of Renaissance Disney available to me and some post-Renaissance Disney available to me, but almost no Bronze Age.
Okay. My honorable mention is going to be Brother Bear. This film I saw in theaters. I remember we saw it in theaters with my older brother, myself, and my 3 younger brothers. It was just a guy's night. And I walked out of that movie, and I thought those 2 moose were so freaking funny. And it is one of the movies that we've done movie night with the family. Now twice I picked it, and my son loved it so much, he picked it his next movie night.
Wow.
It is.
That's a lot of Brother Bear.
Yeah, and I am a huge fan of the story. We got to talk about just being nice to people. We got to talk about conservation. And it was cool. It was really fun. It was certainly one that I will always have fond memories of. Both, I mean, I love this era of Disney, but Brother Bear, specifically, like, I mean, Phil Collins soundtrack, like, it has a lot of great stuff.
That puts it up with some of the actual well-rated Disney movies.
Did you say overrated Disney movies?
I said well-rated.
Oh yeah. I mean, this
gets, like, exactly the amount of love it deserves.
Yeah, this Brother Bear is quite good, and definitely one if you haven't seen. It's on Disney Plus, and you should check out.
Mm-hmm. Do you think? Yeah, I feel like this whole episode is just one big Disney Plus ad.
That's fine. I don't care. Yep.
Yeah,
I love Disney Plus.
absolutely, it's an awesome service, especially if you have a young kid. So Brother Bear was probably the first time they had a moose as a comedic animal sidekick, but it wasn't the last time.
What was the last time?
Putting that out there. Frozen?
That's not a moose.
He's a reindeer. Sven is a reindeer. You're right. Okay. Never mind. I take everything back.
Also, my son loves my Sven voice. If you want to throw out, he always asks me to do my Sven voice, but let's go into my top 5. We both pitched our honorable mentions. My number 5, because my wife would kill me if it didn't make my list, is The Princess Frog.
Mm.
So, I actually saw this movie on
The Princess Frog.
Yeah.
Okay, is that really how it's called?
I'm 99% sure.
Is it not The Princess and the Frog?
I am 100% sure it is The Princess Frog.
I think I just looked it up and it wasn't. 2009 film, The Princess and the Frog. It's the "and" that is very small text on the
splash. I didn't know. The Princess and the Frog. Either way, she's a princess frog in the film. Spoilers.
Sure. That is a lot of spoilers.
It's in the first 10 minutes! Either way, this film I also saw in theaters. Great soundtrack. It really brings you kind of, like, back in a way. I mean, it's the first of the revival era, consider, like, era of Disney, and it really tried to be. Like, that film Entangled, it felt like really we're both like, yo, we're old Disney, but we're new. You know, it was really funny, going into that film, there had been talk of, like, this is the best Disney movie since Lion King. And I was like, there's just no way that that's true. And I walked out, and I was like, oh, man, that might have been the best Disney movie since Lion King, maybe. I don't know. I liked that film probably not quite as much as Tarzan or Hercules, but, like, I questioned it walking out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, first of all, just hearing my wife talk about it, it's pretty amazing. Like,
I'm sure it means a lot to her.
Oh, just, it means the world to her. For those who don't know, my wife is black, and she just, I mean, she loved it. It really felt like Disney finally spoke to her and was talking to her. And, you know, it's funny to hear people criticize this movie now because, you know, the girl spends most of the movie as a frog. But just having a black Disney princess, I promise, I mean, it meant the world to my wife. So, and also, dope soundtrack. So if you're looking for one, definitely that. Number four, a lot of people still have this high. I don't care. I think it's still underrated. It's a Goofy movie. Probably in my top three or four favorite Disney soundtracks. It is in my top five favorite movies, probably. Maybe top 10. Like, I think this film is better than most of the stuff in that era. And after that era, like, I really think that the Goofy movie is, or a Goofy movie is, I mean, it really, it's funny, you know, as a young child, you relate to Max, and you're like, you know, Max just wants to meet this girl dad, and he, like, wants to go on this fun concert, and, like, you want to take him doing your stuff, and, like, you know, you're only a kid once, and, like, then as a dad, you watch it, and you're like, oh my gosh, Max, why can't you just spend some time with your dad? It's funny to kind of see that difference for me.
Yeah, so this is yet another one of those films that I've never seen before. I've seen an extremely Goofy movie many times, and it's super foundational to me, which might represent the slight gap in eras in which we were watching films about social functions in the world that, like, were able to impact us.
You know,
in a big way.
I haven't watched an extremely Goofy movie in a while. I might watch it with Maxwell on my next movie night. But in exchange, you have to watch a Goofy movie.
That's fair. I think I could do that.
It's on Disney Plus, and it is hot fire. My next one, number three, is considered the biggest flop in Disney history.
That's exciting.
And this movie should not have been a flop. This movie is a complete masterpiece with, once again, an amazing soundtrack, an amazing story, out-of-the-park animation, Treasure Planet. This is Disney does Treasure Island, and they do it so well. It makes me so sad that this movie, quote-unquote, flopped. Because, I mean, it is amazing characters. I mean, just in, like, first from the start when she's reading that kid that story, the whole thing is just captivating, brilliant, amazing.
I do love a good frame story.
Oh, it was so good. It is my little brother's favorite Disney film. I know a lot of people who it's their favorite Disney film. Just definitely want, if you haven't seen it, you know, I don't think it got that great of reviews. It flopped. They're all wrong. This film is brilliant. Have you seen it?
I have not. No, I
haven't. Man, I can't believe how much of my list you haven't seen.
I told you, there was like one that I've seen.
Number two, have you seen this one?
That's the one I've seen.
Oh, Big Hero 6. This film was endearing. It was cute. It made you cry. What in the world? And it came out of Disney Studios with no music, and it felt like everything that Pixar does right, but with Disney there. Like, I don't know how else to explain it.
Honestly, animation wise, that sounds like a lot of Disney's work in the revival era. But they go beyond that totally in that movie. It does have the Pixar feel to it, which I guess goes deeper than just really smooth animation.
Yeah, I mean, I I like the classic animation more. Like, you'll notice that this is my only... This is the only one.
I have some weird ones in my list.
Yeah, we'll talk about. I mean, I won't talk about it. You do have a weird one that we certainly can talk about if you want to. Because I think that Big Hero 6, what it did really well is it, like, it, I don't know, it just had this magic, this like the characters and the, like, the love that you felt. This kid lost his... I mean, I don't want to spoil it, because if you haven't seen this movie, you need to go watch it. Like, that's... Like, I don't want to spoil it. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry. And it will do that the second time you watch it. It'll do it the third time you watch it. I mean, it really is an endearing Disney film that I saw in theaters with a friend of mine and his girlfriend at the time and my wife. And... You know, we all walked out of them and we're like, so surprised. I don't know if I didn't, maybe it was my expectations going into that film. It's like, you know, it's like a Disney superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world is this about?
I have some nice compliments that I can give to that film, which is that I think it's really incredible that not many Disney films, I think Pixar does this often, but not many Disney films are set in a world that feels a lot like ours in time and place.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's set in a place that isn't real.
It does just feel like California.
Well, yeah, they take San Francisco and Tokyo and they combine them to make this new city. And it's funny because you, like, see the San Francisco from it and you see the Tokyo from it. And they, like, do a good job of mixing that. But also, you're right, like, it feels real. And you just immediately connect with so much of it. I don't know. I really liked it.
Yeah.
The next one on my list, coming in at number one, and you haven't seen this film, but let me pitch it to you, okay? The live-action My Hero Academia.
I feel like live-action... films of things I love typically flop, so I'm not sure I'm sold yet.
So the movie we're talking about is Sky High. This movie, I think it had a budget of $36 million, and I think it made $80 million. It was cute. It had a great cast. Let me just read you the cast of this film really quick.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, but please deliver it.
Yeah, we got Daniel Panabaker. We got Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Kurt Russell. This is just great. Kurt Russell.
Live action, no less. They're actual faces.
Yes, and Kurt Russell. This film was released in 2005. This is young Kurt Russell, and he's playing the equivalent of, like, All Might or Superman.
Yeah.
And it's about his son going to superhero high school. I literally, this is the pitch meeting that Disney just knocked. I mean, they just knocked it out of the park. They budget of 35 made 86.
Wow. Turned a profit.
Really, really fun.
In other words, not like Adventure World.
Yeah, not
or
at all.
Treasure World.
Not at all.
Treasure Planet.
Yeah, it's not like Treasure Planet. I was trying to get away from it. It makes me sad that movie flopped. But legitimately, Sky High is endearing. It is a story of friendship, of the underdogs, of, bullying. And, I mean, there is so much good there. If you have children, if we're looking for most underrated, not my favorite on this list, but the most underrated Disney film, I think I'd give it to Sky High. That film is pretty great. Pretty great, West. Now, look at all the stuff you have to watch, West.
That's true. No, I think that we're really proving our point here, which is we're giving you something you can act on right now.
Exactly. Let's go from your five to your one. And your number five
sounds
is...
good. Okay, so I said earlier that there's some wacky animation going on my list, but my number five is the one that has the wackiest animation of anything ever because it's animating something that we really don't even know what they looked like. And that is Dinosaur. So Dinosaur is, as the title would suggest, about dinosaurs trying to make it through the world right at the end of the era of dinosaurs, right after the enormous meteor that killed all the dinosaurs hit, and they're just trying to survive.
The budget for this film was $127.5 million.
I believe it. They had to animate all of those dinosaurs and hire paleontologists to tell them what they look like.
The box office was $34.8 million. $349.8 million.
Oh, okay. So it actually grossed.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm actually surprised. I thought that this was going to be a flop.
Uh-huh. But it wasn't. It was sweet. I love that movie because it just, as like an 8-year-old kid who wants nothing more than to look at images of dinosaurs on a screen.
Sure.
Captured my heart, captured my mind, threw in some fun lemur friends for comedic relief. Even my blisters have blisters is a memorable line from that.
Yeah. The underdog aspect of this movie goes across a very wide cast.
Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many different unexpected successes of characters.
Yeah. I really like that about this film. Was it just the dinosaurs for you?
I think no, the narrative was pretty exciting. You know, lose your home, you're trying to find a new one, and you think you know a way to do it, but you have to prove to everyone else that it can happen. That's a pretty time-tested narrative. I think that I would love to see a remake of this film today because of how much scientific knowledge about dinosaurs has progressed. I'd really like to see a feathered dinosaur narrative film.
That would be interesting.
I think it would be really neat.
A velociraptor or a T-Rex chicken? That would be great.
Yeah. I think that you could really turn T-Rexes into comedy if you did that.
I like it. I like that a lot.
So that's my number five pick.
Yeah, I do want to say that even though this isn't my favorite film on your list, I do remember the marketing for this film being amazing. Like, this is one of those Disney films that I wanted to see. I was like, I want to go see Dinosaur. They had a really amazing marketing campaign.
Yeah, well, this film came out in 2000, and I think if I watched it today, its graphics would hold up pretty well. I actually think I could go find it downstairs on VHS, and I should go find it and watch it, but VHS, am I right?
I don't even have a VHS player anymore. I got rid of it.
I'm at my parents' house, so there still is one. Actually, my dad and my sister are downstairs right now watching a movie on VHS.
Nice. Did they have to put it in the rewind machine?
Oh, yeah, they had to rewind it.
But did they have to put it in a rewind machine?
No. The VHS rewinds. We're fortunate enough to have that feature.
Right. We had a machine so that you could put a new movie in. You would take out your other movie and put it in the rewind machine. The entire purpose of the machine was just to rewind VHSs.
Yeah.
So that you didn't have to wait next time you watched the movie. It was like a rule in our house.
Oh, okay. Like that's it's like the predecessor for you of fill your ice tray.
Oh man.
It's been so long since you've had to do ice trays, hasn't it?
You just taught me something about myself on a fundamental level, West.
I'm glad. I'm glad I've listened to you talk about yourself enough that I can teach you something about yourself.
Let's talk about your next thing before we go too far into my psyche.
Nah. Okay, fine. But tell me about why you are white with black spots all over you, because my next film is 101 Dalmatians.
I'm black with white spots. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, you would not go well in Cruella de Vil's coat, is all I can say. Am definitely talking about the animated film and not the live-action remake, because the live-action remake was not worth watching, in my opinion.
Holy crap.
What?
This movie's budget was 3.6. Its box office was $303 million.
Hey, you know what? Dogs sell.
I'm just saying, So tell me why it's underrated. Like, do people not universally love this film?
I guess I don't know about that. I would say that I was for pulling for most of my list, I pulled it via pulling up IMDb, putting in Disney films, and sorting by ranking, by IMDb rating. So I chose movies from the bottom half of IMDb rated. So I guess this would be critically underrated, not fan underrated.
This movie came out January 25th, 1961, with a runtime of 79 minutes. I think this film holds up, too. Like,
I agree.
I think that this film, if you look back on it, they did a really good job, even in the animation, of, like...
Spencer can sell the film. I don't even have to.
No, I'm just saying, like, on your list, like, I think this one holds up. I think this is... your next film is also one of my favorite Disney movies, too. But, I mean, this film... I think this is a good one, West.
Yeah, I think it's really great. Things I love about it, I love how memorable the villain Cruella de Vil is. She has a memorable theme song, which they put in organically, which is awesome, because the owner of the dad dog writes music, which is a cool character to have. I like it because whenever I'm playing a role-playing game and I'm thinking about sneaking around kind of dumb bad guys, I'm thinking of the scene in that abandoned house where all of the dogs have to sneak around these two bumbling oafs who are Cruella de Vil's cronies. I think that's a really memorable scene. I really love the idea of the dog communication network where they bark a lot. I think that's a cool way to explain dogs barking in the night.
Yeah, I think that this is one that if you haven't watched with your kids yet, or maybe you're just a little bit younger and you haven't watched it yourself, it's definitely one that I agree holds up really well.
Ooh, the tension when the puppies are being born.
Yeah.
That's really fun as well.
Yeah, the car chase is really good too.
Oh yeah, it's just such a great film.
I think from start to finish, this film. I mean, it's to think that they fit it all in 79 minutes.
Yeah, modern day movies do not know how to tell stories with so many characters.
Yeah, it's
and by so many characters, I mean
101.
Really, at least 95 of those 101 Dalmatian puppies are pretty redundant in character. I think 4 of the puppies stand out.
But if you boop their snoot, they all matter.
Oh, definitely. No. I'm not saying puppies don't matter. No puppy doesn't matter. I'm just saying that character-wise, they really made 100 dogs seem like not that many dogs character-wise.
Yeah, that's fair. Number 3.
Yeah. So number 3 on my list is The Emperor's New Groove, which, again, pulling from IMDb's underrated list, not from what people feel about in their minds and hearts, because I think that many people would agree that this film is amazing. It is extremely funny. And it's not just that it's like slapstick funny. The lines are so good. The lack of self-awareness in the characters is so good. The learning that our protagonist has to do over the course of it is awesome. I think llamas are an inherently humorous thing. I babysat all spring, and the fourth grader I babysat with very much thought that llamas were something special and very funny, and I very much agree with him.
Patrick Warburton's ability to play Gronk in this film, or Kronk.
Yeah.
Was phenomenal. Pacha, played by John Goodman. Cusco, played by David Spade. Their dynamic. This is legitimately like one of my top five.
Edna.
Yzma?
Or Yzma, yeah. I don't know why I said Edna.
Eartha Kitt? I actually don't know who this is.
Well, I think Yzma might be like...
Oh, she's the one that played Madame Zardini in Holes.
Oh, okay.
I did not know that.
That's an interesting cross But she's a really memorable villain. I think that they played the trope of like secret villain hideout really well with her. I think that's a really funny scene. Also, it is evident to anyone who's listening that Spencer is a father and watches a lot of Disney movies with his kids recently, and it's been a while since I've seen any Disney.
I watched this movie for my last movie night.
Yeah.
I mean, also, this movie's just great. You've got Smash It With a Hammer. You've got Kronk doing his own theme music.
I think Kronk is, like, such an evocative character, right?
He got his own spinoff.
Oh, totally. And think of how many characters have gotten that are basically the Muscle. The Muscle doesn't usually get a spinoff.
Yeah, this one is, if you haven't seen this film, you have to see it. I mean, this film got a TV show. It got a spinoff movie. Like, and it got
super successful, super popular, but bad ratings on IMDb for some reason.
Yeah, that is, to be fair, it did not do as well as either 101 Dalmatians or Dinosaur in the Box Office.
Yeah, I feel like my list is going to be like an upside down pyramid in terms of success at the box office to how much I like it. So incredible film, 10 out of 10 would rewatch, very funny. My next film, my number two film that I think is underrated that I love, and I pulled them by how they were rated on IMDb. I ranked them by the amount of work you would have to do to get me to rewatch it right now. And my second movie on this list is Atlantis, which is just an awesome, awesome adventure story. I love it from the amount the main character does not matter, could not matter less. I think that that's an interesting place to go in storytelling. He's more or less just there to watch and read. But I love the team that's built around him. I think all of those characters are really funny. I love the sense of adventure and scale, right? These folks have to travel deep under the sea and then even deeper under the crust of the earth under the sea to get to Atlantis. The coolest hidden place to go visit, I think, ever. I really like the way they built that.
Indiana Jones 4 has some words for you. That was obviously a joke. Please don't leave a comment about that.
Someone throw a crystal skull at him. I think that's what Indiana Jones 4 is. And if you can't do a crystal skull, how about a bowl?
No, crystal skull is fine. Just make sure it's crystal skull vodka. Any ounces is fine.
I was going to make a Mystery Men reference, which is a movie you definitely haven't seen and is incredible.
No, I'll take the crystal skull vodka.
Yeah, I know you would. Atlantis is awesome. I think that there are so many interesting characters. For me, I think one of the reasons this film is very built up in my mind is that it was actually a long time in my life until I actually saw the film, but I had several VHSs growing up that had it as a commercial. So the hype for it was real by the time I watched it. Which, by the way, that is an experience that like will never happen again, which is like, you didn't have access to the movie, but you got to see the commercial of it over and over again because the movies you did have access to had that commercial.
Man, they got us so good with that, too. Like, can you imagine? Like, and the thing is, I loved that as a kid.
It was sick.
Loved it. Yeah, and I know you did. And, like, you watched the commercials. You were like, yeah, next up, because you've watched the movie 15 times. Yeah. So you know what the next commercial is.
Yeah.
Coming soon from the wonderful world of Disney.
Yeah, we have. Oh yeah, the Disney Channel commentary on the commercials. It amazing.
So Atlantis, number two. I have to be honest. I do not actually like this film. But
I'm aware.
How did you know?
you gave me several looks, and you told me that you didn't like some of my films up, and you liked the last two, which makes the odds tilted the other way for
them. So I don't enjoy this film, but I do know a lot of people do, and there's a lot of people that have a crush on Milo. So, you know.
That's fair. I think that Milo is a...
He's retro. He's back in style, baby. Let's go.
I also think he's that, like, that excellent style of male character where he's, like, so useless, you can't help but want to take care of him.
Yeah, I agree. I think...
And he's funny.
He is certainly endearing. I will give him that. You know what? It's funny because how old are you? Or you don't have to answer on the podcast if you don't want to.
I turned 25 last week, as you might know if you had watched last week's podcast.
Okay. I didn't remember if we said your actual age.
I don't remember either.
That puts you around the same age as my brother that's just below me in age. And he actually is the reason that I don't like this film. Not that he did anything wrong, but, you know, as a person who grew up in a house of six kids... When one of your siblings wants to watch a film and you don't want to watch it, and the sibling is like my little brother, whom I love, by the way, he would watch films back to back to back to back somewhere and, like, occupy a room for an entire day. No, of the same movie.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I just... so they're like, this one, Monsters, Inc. is another one. There's just a couple that I'm just like, I don't ever want to watch that movie ever again in my whole life.
That's fair. So it was like too much of a thing. That was
the problem. My son almost did that to Lion King for me. And I now have to wean him off of Lion King because I love that movie so much that I can't handle it. So it's really nothing against Atlantis. Maybe I should rewatch it. You're kind of convincing me right now, to be honest. They're like, ooh.
Just like, imagine back to the scene where the first time they detach the submarine from the ship. This film is so steampunk. It's awesome.
Okay. I'm gonna rewatch it. You've convinced me.
Yeah. I think that while many people who are attracted to women would have a crush on Kida, the princess from Atlantis, I think that the character that like really sticks with me is Lieutenant Helga Katrina Sinclair, the second in command lieutenant who like just spends the whole time like dropping so much shade on all of the other characters, wields the biggest weapons. I think that she's a really funny character. And I certainly know some people who would be the first to tell you that she's a lesbian icon.
There you go. I think this film is one that I'm going to give a rewatch to. And I encourage the listeners, if you haven't watched it, give it a try.
All right. So my final film is gonna make some people mad because I certainly have seen lots of discussion on does Pixar count as Disney over the course of my time consuming media. And here's what I'm gonna say. Except for that very short number of years where Pixar was not part of Disney, Pixar is Disney. And you don't get to argue with me about it unless you'd like to engage with our media, in which case I really can't complain. Because that's how media works.
It's fine. I think that it's fair to put Pixar in here if you want. Yeah, I didn't, but it's your list, man. It's your list.
I think that the reason why not many Pixar films show up in this list is because it's the underrated Disney movies, right? Not our favorite.
Yeah, underrated. Right. Because if it was overrated Disney films, a lot of the Pixar films would show up for me.
Sure. And even, like, our favorite, right? Pixar has really, really good movies, some of which have, like, absolutely top-tier fanaticism for
them. Oh, yeah. Up? Chef's kiss, baby. Let's go.
Appropriate fanaticism. But you know what Pixar movie I have always loved to death, and no one else has really understand the love for it outside of my family? It's A Bug's Life.
Tell me why.
Oh. I'll start with the end. If you've ever sat through the credits of A Bug's Life, it was the first animated film to have a bloopers reel. Which, of course, is kind of a joke in animation because that's not how bloopers work. But is the funniest thing in the world. In the movie, there's a bird, and the bird's a really scary threat in the movie. One of the things, please go look this up. Like, watch it on YouTube. I'm sure it's out there.
The blooper reel is pretty great.
The blooper reel is awesome. Like, we would watch that film, and at the end of that film, my whole family would have one of those moments of, like, can't stop laughing every single time the bird broke.
Yeah. It's head twitches, right? If I remember correctly.
I think it just, like, stops, and then the caterpillar character, Timely, who I have a plush of Timely.
Next to your Turtwig, baby. Let's go.
Next to my Turtwig. Yep. But I have a plush of Timely. For those of you who are listening to this instead of watching it, Timely is the caterpillar character. I have about a 6-inch plush of him, which is awesome.
He died, right?
Huh?
The voice actor for...
Oh, I don't know.
I think so. I think that they gave him, like, credit in, like, Toy Story 3 or something, because they had been in every single Pixar movie ever up till then.
Oh, wow. I was not aware. I've not done my research anywhere as much as you have, other than looking up that IMDb list. But
I just have useless facts in my head. I don't know that. Anyway, keep going.
You did research at some point, whether or not you did it in preparation for this show. You could say that every moment of your life has been preparation for this show.
That's Spencer. Fair. That's a good point.
And one of the reasons I can say that is that Bug's Life taught me some really great metaphors, and honestly, probably taught me the concept of metaphor itself. Because of how the protagonist Flick uses a rock as a metaphor for a seed, even though it's clearly a rock and is joked about several times. But I love this film because it shows honestly kind of a narrative that I really empathize with. A smart, creative character who doesn't fit in well with a highly organized society, who's trying to make things better, trying to make things easier, being innovative.
What did you call him?
Flick?
No, the caterpillar.
Timely. Am I wrong?
It's Heimlich.
Heimlich. That also makes sense because he's eating all the time.
It is Heimlich, and anyway, keep going. Sorry. He did die in 2005. They did give him credit in that film.
Ah, sad. But then he leaves his society because he's sent away on a go out there and die mission, but he comes back successful. But along the way, he meets an incredible group of characters. Much more diverse, much more different, much more appreciative of creativity, of curiosity, of being different, because they're in a circus, right?
Right.
And as we talked about on our Avatar episodes, being in a circus...
is dope.
Is dope. Ty Lee, definitely absolute circus animal.
Yeah, we'll have to... I'm almost done with season 2, so we're almost ready for the next Avatar episode.
So make sure that you are getting ready to watch that Avatar so you can keep up with us as we discuss it.
So I have a question about A Bug's Life, because have you watched it as an adult?
Absolutely.
Okay. I have not yet. I do plan on it being possibly one of my next couple movie nights.
Mm-hmm.
There is a scene in that film that started trending again because of Black Lives Matter. Do you know which scene it is?
Oh, yes. There are absolutely some scenes, and I feel like this is a part of... like, circus culture as it is humorous at the time that are absolutely disrespectful.
No, it's actually not one of those. It's actually the one where the two of the crickets don't want, or grasshoppers don't want to go back. And the David Spacey's character, explains to them why they're going back.
Hopper,
is that his name?
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey's character, Hopper.
Did he really play that in...
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay.
It's the perfect voice for that character, for what it's worth.
Yeah, totally.
Even though he turned out to be a scumbag, it's still, you know...
I was going to say, with where things have gone, like, it's...
it's even better that he played the villain.
Yeah.
He played a great villain. Might be for reasons. But... you know, they talk about, you know, not wanting to go back, and, you know, he explains the power of numbers.
Yeah.
And the power of the masses and the people fighting for what they believe in. And it was a really powerful scene watching it again. kind of thinking about oppression, and yeah. I'm probably going to watch it again.
Absolutely. I think that moment when all of the ants revolt against the grasshoppers at the end, I think that that's a really powerful moment of how, even if individuals are less intimidating as an individual, the moment they rise up, you get scared quick. Which makes sense.
Absolutely.
This
film had a lot that, it's funny, my wife doesn't like this film very much, so I haven't watched it in my adult life, but I have fond memories of this film. This is another one that was marketed really heavily. I think it was the first Disney Pixar film, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? 1998. So I feel like it had to have been after Toy Story.
You're right, because Toy Story would have been 95 or so.
Yeah, because Toy Story definitely, yeah, 95. Year okay. I was born.
I don't have words for that. Okay, so wrap this up. One movie from my list that you're going to watch, Wes. What are you
going
to watch?
What movie am I going to watch from your list?
Yeah.
I think I cannot believe I've not seen The Princess and the Frog. I need to go watch it.
I also can't believe you haven't seen that.
Absolutely.
I can't believe you haven't seen the Goofy movie either, for what it's
that
worth.
That one I'm going to watch like without having to make a commitment, so I'm going to make a commitment to seeing The Princess and the Frog.
Okay. Sounds good to me. If you want to come over here to watch it, I'm sure Devonair would love to have you, because it's like literally one of her favorite movies.
Makes sense.
Hard
to convince people to watch their favorite movies.
I'm going to go with A Bug's Life. It's funny, because I want to commit to watching 101 Dalmatians again.
It's only 79 minutes, Spencer.
It's really not that long. I'll try and convince Maxwell to pick one of these for his movie night, and then I'll pick one for my movie night.
How often can you convince Maxwell to watch a film he's never seen before for his movie night?
Often. Just gotta get it in there, you know?
Yeah. He's a child. He's easily manipulable.
Exactly. He's like clay, you know? You just gotta mold
him. Absolutely. That malleability is so important.
Speaking of things that you can mold my Twitter personality. You can do that by going to on Twitter and go just add me, at Spencer13H. I'm not a Magic player anymore. Maybe I am. I don't know. I'm not gonna commit to that, but, you know,
He's not a public Magic player.
Exactly. Right? You'll never know if I'm playing. So I need other things to think about and do. So follow me on Twitter at Spencer13H. Where can people find you, West?
Oh, you can find me at East_monotone. That is two N's in the tone. Because it's a play on my last name.
You can find the show at NeedToNerdPod. And you can like us over on our YouTube channel. Smash that like button. Hit that subscribe button. We're still not on iTunes yet. I'm not sure what's taking so long on that, but we are everywhere else. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Don't forget, in the show notes, there will be a link to, if you want to support the Black Lives Matter movement with money from your pocket, you know, there will be ways for you to do that down below. It is certainly important to us, to my family. Thank you, everybody, so much for watching. I hope we gave you some awesome Disney content to consume.
Yeah, and if you haven't yet acquired a way to watch Disney movies in the modern era, go get Disney Plus. What are you waiting for? So much content. Disney, please sponsor.
Dude, we should totally do like quarterly giveaways of like a year subscription to different services that we enjoy.
Oh, wow. We got to make a Patreon for that.
Yeah, I'm just throwing out ideas. Thank you, everybody, Absolutely. So much for watching. We'll see you guys all next time on another episode of Need to Nerd.